This is CliffCentral.com.
Alrighty, CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning. It's the 14th of January. Let us check in with Sia and see what's happening in Said by Sia this morning. That, of course, is your opportunity to get some inspiration and some really good news to start your week, and sometimes just hear about people who are doing great things. Take it away, Sia Sangweni.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to feel good about the world right now?
Damn right. Who doesn't?
If you're having like one of our listeners who messaged us just before 7 talking about her double knee situation, mm-hmm. Well, here's some great news from the medical world. Folks, believe it or not, but surgeons have now officially successfully implanted the world's first 3D printed rib. How crazy. In a world first, surgeons
Who needs Eve or Adam? Who gave a rib to who?
Adam gave his rib to make Eve.
Yes,
yeah, and I think she can just print her own.
The procedure was recently performed in Bulgaria, of all places, and it used an implant which was created from this FDA-approved material called Nylon 680. But in addition to it being actually drastically cheaper than titanium, which they'd ordinarily used, the material was used to make the rib in less than 24 hours.
Hmm.
And it was quite, if you want the actual figure, it only cost $114. So according to 3D Gents, which is the company that manufactured the 3D printer used for the procedure, the material is very unique because it can withstand the temperatures necessary for the likes of sterilization, and also it functions more similarly to an actual rib than titanium implants. And if you do want to know, the patient who was diagnosed with a deformity in his ribs is actually now fully recovered and doing well and fine. He was 35 years old, and physicians say that after this being the world first, they're looking forward to performing so many more similar surgeries in future. So talk about a great way to look at science and the things that it can do.
And how long does it take to grow it?
Less than 24 hours.
That's amazing. I have this penis mushroom type thing growing in my garden. Nice. No, I only noticed it on... No, seriously, listen to this. I've actually been observing this thing for like the whole weekend. Mm. It started off as a little mushroom in the garden, like a normal little tiny little mushroom. It's grown into this long dildo-shaped thing.
It's got a big cap on it.
It's got a big cap on it. And I walked out there this morning. I was like, Jesus, this thing's grown. It's quadrupled in size since Thursday. I think it might take over my whole garden.
You don't really want a alien. Prominent dildo-shaped something.
No, it's just a very... It's a long...
Being the highlight of your
long
garden.
Long penis-shaped mushroom.
I used to hate mushrooms, eating them as a child.
Why?
Because of that exact same thing. I'd see how quickly they...
They grew
morphed
so fast.
Out of the ground, and it was just creepy.
So I forgot that they can grow that fast. And when I saw this thing... I mean, you can literally see it growing in front of your very eyes. If you just watch it long enough, you'll see the growth. It's incredible.
My parents bought these like mushroom seeds things, not really seeds.
Spores.
Like, yeah. And they used to keep it in this polystyrene thing on top of the fridge. Oh my word, you'd walk in there in the morning and there were all shapes and sizes of weird things growing out of there. It's just so creepy.
Maybe your parents are into magic mushrooms and that's what they were doing.
Maybe.
Maybe, huh? But it's probably because of all the rain. That all of this was happening. Hey, today at 8 a.m., we bring you another episode in our series For the Love of Law, where we take you behind the scenes of South Africa's smartest law firm. Yep, you could see the cranes on the horizon in Johannesburg. You know what that means, right? That Lisa Tanini has something to do with it. She's a director at Fluxmans, and she's been a director since 2003. Lisa is the go-to person for property law. She's worked on many exciting and diverse projects, Melrose Arch, the Innovation Hub in Pretoria, and the establishment of various townships and sectional title schemes. You can find out more by going to cliffcentral.com. I spoke to someone the other day who isn't even in law, and they've been listening to these. Because they find it interesting. They want to know who the people are who are behind the scenes at these important law firms. And Fluxman's attorneys are the people who bring you this and all the other episodes you can find on cliffcentral.com. Fluxman's attorneys, one of South Africa's leading law firms for the love of law. If you're an aspiring lawyer, if you're an article clerk at one of the other firms or even at that firm, if you're one of the people who work inside the law, if you're just an observer, casual observer from the outside, this can give you a little insight.
And just want to know more.
That's right. You found it interesting. You came along when I did the interviews.
Mm. And we have a few more up our sleeve.
That's right. They're all coming. So keep an eye on that, an ear on cliffcentral.com, and you can be part of this ongoing story and find out what it's like inside a big law firm like Fluxman's. All right. There's loads of news. Where do we begin this morning? Ash, do you want to take us away?
Yeah, there's... I don't know if I missed the story, because, you know, they say you need to, like, use a kidney to pay for an iPhone. And apparently there was somebody who did that.
No.
They say you can use a kidney to pay for an iPhone?
No
one's like ever asked me for one of those.
No, it's the expression that it'll cost you a kidney.
I thought it was like an option on the screen when you go, how would you like to pay? PayPal, credit card, cash, kidney.
Like, people were joking that that's how much it was and how expensive it was.
Right.
There was actually a teenager in China who sold his kidney for an iPhone.
Ay, ay, ay. What happened?
He's now bedridden for life.
There we go.
No.
So it was quite a way back, though. He's 25 now, and he sold it when he was 17. he sold it to the black market to buy the latest Apple products. Wang Shangkun was ill shortly after the illegal surgery and began suffering from decreased level kidney function. 8 years on, he's bedridden, in need of dialysis daily after his remaining organ has failed. He sold it for the equivalent of 45,000 rand.
Oh, that'll get you an iPhone.
Well, he got an iPhone and an iPhone 4 and an iPad 2.
Huh.
Sounds like he's a bit greedy.
Yeah.
A bit greedy, yeah.
He said, why do I need a second kidney? One's enough.
Yeah, that's why I don't donate, by the way. I'm not a donor. I know people get cross with me, but I need both those. And if they hear, if I'm in an accident, they hear that I'm a donor, they're going to be like, let's harvest him.
Oh, no. I'm a donor for once I die, or if I'm dying.
Yeah.
But there's nothing much you'd get out of me, really.
No, I don't think we want to use your liver.
No, not my liver, not the lungs.
Although, you know, the liver is the only organ that can completely regenerate itself.
That's
true. Like if you have just a small piece of your liver left, it will grow back to a normal liver.
Hmm.
Oof.
Well, this guy's kidney didn't grow back, and he's... Family has had to be compensated. They've been compensated in about 3 million rand. Well, because of the... I don't know how, but obviously to pay for the hospital costs.
But who paid the 3 million?
It was...
Apple.
No, it actually... The whole thing went to court, and because of the surgery being illegal and being allowed to pass...
Someone has taken responsibility.
It
costs, yeah.
Well, he's very lucky, because I think Apple has no part in this.
No, of course not.
It was his decision.
What if he'd gone and bought a car?
There we go. It wouldn't be whatever car brand he bought that's to blame.
Just basically, the lesson we can all take away from this is, don't sell an organ for an iPhone.
No.
Stupid, stupid, stupid.
I mean,
how badly do you want a new phone that you would do that?
He said, I just wanted to show it off to my friends.
Well, now you're bedridden, dude. Oh.
For life. All right.
Oh, that's scary. So
apparently, I always get nervous about this. I went on a beautiful cruise last year on this ship. Went to the Mediterranean. Ended up in Monte Carlo watching this firework display. And I thought, this is the way to travel, man. Mm. This is the way to go. Mm. It sounds amazing. But then I do get nervous. You hear about these ships where everybody gets sick. They'll start vomiting over the edge.
Oh,
so this is a different kind of cruise. Tell me about this.
Nearly 500 people are now sick on the Royal Caribbean cruise on the ship. Started off, but they literally got onto the ship. They boarded, and a day later they were already... There were 275 people ill already.
Was it a stomach bug?
It's a gastrointestinal illness. So obviously what happens, you've got lots of vomit. You've got lots of diarrhea.
What do you have, Leanne? Mm-mm. A lot of what?
Oh.
Yeah, she can't even say the word,
I'm
by
just
the
imagining
way.
It just sloshing all over. I'm feeling...
And you know, on a ship like that, it can either...
It moves and it...
Yeah, it's always... It's going left and right, and it's going up and down. And if someone throws up in a passage, the passages are always internal. So that smell doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be smelling other people's nausea the whole time.
And also, I mean, just being on a cruise myself, my brother and I shared a cabin. And he went to the loo. I was ill, so I was lying down in bed. I couldn't even get up. I was already ill. And he went to the loo, and you can hear everything.
Oh, yeah.
I could hear... You know, it's like the reverse of a kiss sound when the anus opens. It's like... Ah! I could actually hear his anus opening.
Incredible acoustics from that bowl.
Oh, my word. Can you imagine with all the vomiting and pooing going on that ship?
There's a lot of pooing. Oh,
no, what a nightmare.
That was overly descriptive, actually. That was too descriptive.
Everyone on the ship is getting a refund due to this outbreak. But obviously it's highly contagious as well. It just sits in food. It sits on countertops. You can't get rid of it.
And everybody's drinking the water and everybody's eating the food. And if there's one... little spiteful bacterium that manages to make more of itself, you're in big trouble.
They're using the same mop to clean your loo as they did next door to you.
You know what a financial burden this is? Because these cruise ships, like the margins, it's kind of like airlines, really.
Yeah,
they've got to be in rotation all the time. So now you've got to quarantine this thing, refund the passengers.
Uh-huh.
Like it'll take years for them to recoup this with the margins
involved. Well, yeah, and you have to clean the ship up now. You know, that's also part of the problem.
And then it'll always be known as the Royal Caribbean
Vomit Cruise.
Shits of the Sea, whatever they call it.
Yeah, no, that sounds horrendous. And as you say, Leanne, slushing around in bags.
Mm.
You know, all that stuff. Shepherd's delight.
Shepherd's disappointment.
All right, Leanne, use a company called Don't Queue when you go for your drivers. They help you get your driver's license even if it expired. And a lot of other people with some suggestions here. Ben's cat fell from the window over the weekend. But Ben, don't stress. My Bengal Leia did a bit of flying twice out of the fourth floor.
Ooh.
Fourth floor?
Yeah. Pins and brakes, but she's still okay 6 years later.
Goodness me.
Cats can handle that. Morning
with
all. I need some advice. I'm completely broke as fuck. To be honest, cash will be better than advice. Account details to follow. No, because everybody is.
Yeah,
it's January.
We're all in the same boat, sickly boat.
Yeah, sorry, it's January. Stormy Daniels says Trump's penis looks like a Mario Kart character.
Yes, that was the mushroom description, and I think it may be in reference to your description of your big penis mushroom growing in the garden.
Penis mushroom growing in my garden.
Isn't that an amazing thought?
If it's still there when I get home, I'll take a picture of it for you.
Every time you look out at your garden, you have to think of Trump's penis.
Well, I didn't, but Leanne did.
Now you will.
All right, if you want to get hold of us, 079-748-2090. That's the number to send a message to, cliffcentral.com. There are other things that we need to pay attention to. Apparently, Canadian air traffic controllers have been buying pizza for unpaid US colleagues because of the government shutdown.
Yeah, they're literally tens of thousands, or rather 10,000 US staff who haven't received paychecks since late December because of the shutdown. And the good old Canadians, being as sweet as they are.
They're so nice.
I know. Mm. It started off with one little... division buying the other division pies, and now it's turned to pizzas, and the idea has snowballed. They've bought now hundreds of pizzas for their American counterparts, and it's become an industry-wide show of support during this partial shutdown.
Why are Canadians so nice? What is it that makes them so nice? I mean, they're on the same continent as the Americans. The Americans don't have their reputation for being nice, do they?
They would never have thought of that. 36 facilities have received pizza from Canada, and that number's growing by the hour.
I think that is spectacular. That's really cool.
Is it the maple syrup?
Don't know. They're just really nice.
The ice hockey.
It's just maybe the cold in the winter. Maybe it's the fact that they have the best of what America has in terms of being a North American country. They've, you know, productive first world economy, but they're also quite European in some ways. I mean, part of Canada,
with the French element.
Yeah, part of Canada, Quebec. They only speak French, So who knows?
I don't think they feel they have to be nice because they need to contrast the Americans.
Maybe.
It's like, well, we're better than that kind of thing.
Maybe that's it. All right, what else is going on?
Well, Saudi women.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
What's going on with them? I thought they were having a better time than they were 10 years ago.
They're trying. They're like the rights people in Saudi, it's a very small group of people around women rights, but they are trying. So previously what happened is that to divorce a woman in Saudi Arabia, you would just have to say, I want to divorce you 3 times.
Talak, talak, talak.
And then you would just basically sign a piece of paper.
Is that really how you say it?
And that would be it. But now Saudi women are getting SMS notification about these divorces.
That's nice. At least now they're warned.
Step up.
You are minding your own business out and about. You get a text from your husband saying, oh, by the way,
cool. It's done.
It's done. Talak.
And that talak, 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 and then you're finished. Is that it?
Yeah. But now there's an actual SMS that comes by.
You know, I wonder how those Saudi women feel when they look at like Mackenzie Bezos. And they say, well, she and her husband have negotiated this settlement. They're both amicably parting ways. First of all, there's a lot of respect, a mutual respect in the way that they're talking about each other in the press, even if they didn't get along. And then she gets half of his stuff. And then she, in Saudi Arabia, goes, if I leave Akbar, I'm getting nothing. Plus, he can just dump me by SMS, and it's over.
And SMS is the improvement. Don't forget.
Yeah, SMS is better.
This is the step forward.
Thank God he didn't just say it to me in the street and embarrass me in front of all my friends. He SMS'd me at least.
Oh,
poor Saudi woman. I really feel like, you know, if you're going to be a feminist and you're not going to be angry about Saudi women and what they have to go through, but you're cross about, I don't know, some made-up pay gap or whatever, then you really need to observe a little more closely what's going on in the world around you.
Oh.
What would you do if you were a Saudi woman, Nihan?
I'd just stop breathing.
That'd be her worst nightmare. How does she get booze?
You couldn't drink.
No.
Couldn't get divorced. Those are two of your favorite things. In fact, when I think of you, the first two things I think about are drink and divorce.
Oh. The opposite to a Saudi woman.
Yeah.
Okay, no, those aren't the first two things I think about. I think nicer things of you, but...
Those
I
are
do
in the
think
top
of
five?
Them. Yeah, they're in the top five. Like, imagine if you were stuck with your...
No, it's a nightmare.
Oh, my God. You don't have a say as a woman.
No.
You can't divorce your husband, by the way.
No, of course not, because you can do no wrong. So why would you?
Do you even have a choice as to whether you want to get married or not?
Probably not.
And don't you need a man if you were to go to court?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you are not legally seen as a person.
Your testimony counts half of what a man's does.
You're half a person.
So if you're a woman and you see a murder happen in front of your very eyes, and you are the witness, but a man comes into the story, and he was a witness, but he saw it like 10 minutes after you. He saw the scene. His testimony counts twice, yours counts half.
It's so bad it actually makes my head hurt.
Tell you what makes my brain hurt is this man in Chicago, 19-year-old guy, who has been accused of beating to death a 4-year-old girl. Her name's Skylar Mendez, because she'd spilt juice on his Xbox.
You are kidding me.
Yeah. No, not kidding. Really happened. They're obviously seeking the life sentence for him. It was his girlfriend's daughter, and he was babysitting her, and he brought her into hospital after she'd lost consciousness and initially claimed that she'd fallen.
Oh my God.
Died a few days later following surgery that doctors had hoped would relieve the swelling of her brain. But her mother wasn't at home at the time of the incident. How do you even get over this?
You don't. You don't. This is awful.
And he looks like a real slob as well, an Xbox slob.
What a horrible human being.
I just don't... People are just...
I mean, to prioritize your Xbox over human life, there's something seriously wrong with you.
Mm.
Ben likes that show Black Mirror, and they get into like just how technology can ruin people. Some of their storylines are based on how we're just losing our humanity.
Yeah, I think in this case, it's like a priority of possession thing.
Mm.
but it'd be great to see this person now go into an actual virtual video game setup where he needs to fight against real fighters. See how that goes for him.
Well, he's going to jail.
Yeah.
See how that goes. I've been paying attention to this group called Purple Cow. I don't know if you've seen them.
No.
Purplecow.mobi. They basically are solving problems in South Africa. They're trying to figure out ways for us to deal with some potentially very bad things that are going on in society. Here they deal with the matric dropout situation. Just listen to their solution. Tell me what you think. All right? It's quite long, but I'll...
In 2016, there were 1,067,075 learners in grade 10 around the country. In 2018, only 512,735 of them wrote the matric exam. Less than half. What happened to the other 554,340 learners? What's the problem? For most job opportunities, or for further study, a matric certificate is the basic qualification required. Every year we have more than 500,000 youngsters leaving school without that minimum qualification. Most of them will never find jobs or become productive members of society. Many of them are likely to fall into lives of crime. Why is it broken? During the Mandela era, public schools were having difficulties finding enough places for new learners in grade 1. Instead of building more classrooms or hiring more teachers, the ANC government reduced the number of children going into grade 1. The South African Schools Act was amended in 1997 to raise the minimum age of a child starting school to the year in which they turn 7 years old. This was a really stupid thing to do.
See, I didn't even know any of that. And then what they do is they propose basically adding, first of all, two shifts to every school so that you have a morning shift and an afternoon shift and having double the number of teachers but using the same resources, the same classrooms and all the rest. And they propose a whole bunch of other interesting things too. I don't know who these guys are, but I like the idea that there are people solving the problem. There are people talking about solutions, not problems.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I didn't realize that you have to go to school in the year that you turn 7.
I remember that happening.
But when I was at school, you could go, I think at five or six.
Five.
No,
I remember the change when it happened.
So you obviously need to go earlier, not later. That just because they wanted to deal with numbers, they moved the age up to 7. That's a terrible idea.
It was a very short-term solution. And
yeah,
it's now left a backlog.
Definitely. It's a bunch of kids now who are suffering because of this, and we're not getting as many people through matric as we normally would. And you hear the government boasting about their matric pass rate, but we're forgetting about the, I think it's 93 out of every 100 people who are supposedly, you know, being shouted about as matric pass candidates that get left behind from grade 1 right the way through.
Yeah, and also what always concerns me is the level of education,
the quality of education.
Yeah.
Have you ever lost a wedding ring or an engagement ring?
I haven't, not yet.
No.
Because apparently this is a big, big problem. And it can be very painful and expensive for couples.
Sure.
And particularly in the Northern Hemisphere where they have snow, what happens is that a lot of those rings get lost in the snow.
Mm. And you're freezing, so your fingers have shrunk.
And your ring falls off and falls into the snow, or it gets lost in a parking lot, or it gets lost in the car, or it gets lost somewhere. Down the drain is a big one.
Mm.
So a lot of companies are making huge money because they have metal detectors and they present an opportunity to intervene and be the hero. This is what the Atlantic
is reporting. Not those pirates who just walk along beaches or snow areas so that they can find something.
You get those as well.
For themselves. But
there are people who you can hire them. They'll come out with their metal detectors and you say, look, somewhere in the garden here, I must have lost my ring. Mm. They'll try to find it for you. Isn't that interesting? Well, you turn into a serious hero if you find that.
Yeah.
Speaking of engagement rings, I don't think you're going to really struggle to find the one that just got put onto Miss Universe, Demi Lee Nell.
Yes, she is marrying Tim Tebow, right?
Yeah, so he's been taking a knee his whole life in preparation for this moment. So he dropped to a knee and gave her a 7.2 carat engagement ring. You don't need a metal detector for that. You can see that.
You can see it from outer space.
You can see that with like...
Look, most people have like between half a carat and a carat.
Yeah, that's...
Or even, not even a carat, it's a bit much.
Yeah, like a carat is quite big.
So you think seven times that size.
She can't visit this country. They'll chop her hand off.
7-carat engagement ring. Do you have a picture of that?
Yeah. It's
now, apparently they also had Michael Moll perform it there. Jesus, that thing's huge.
Michael Moll came out of... So if you've seen Blood Diamond, this was the diamond
Matthew Moll.
This was the diamond that Leonardo DiCaprio's character was trying to get off the continent. It's now on Demi Lee Peters' finger. That's the same size.
So how did she and Tim Tebow even meet?
Well, they're both into Jesus, I think. And obviously they're both, you know, people of profile.
So they must have met at some party or some event.
Yeah.
Celebrity church.
Celebrity church. Yeah, there we go. That's always a good overlap. When you're at a celebrity church, then you know you're doing well.
And they seem to have, yeah, that's it. They're happy, happy, happy.
Nice.
7.2. I mean, I know there's more to the story, like true love and all that kind of stuff, but cheap is this ring.
There is a formula. It's meant to be like 3 months of salary.
Yeah.
For an engagement ring. That's what I remember hearing. The formula for an engagement ring is you're meant to spend the equivalent of 3 months of earnings on the ring.
That sounds ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but that's what people say. That's the, and the reason that they say
okay,
that,
it's two, apparently, two months.
Two, okay.
Wait, so hang on a second. There's another thing that De Beers said along with inventing the engagement ring.
Because yeah, it's totally made up. So what do they say, 2 months?
Yeah, rule of thumb, spend 2 months of your income on an engagement ring. So if you're making $1,000 per month, spend $2,000 on it.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like that parable that you taught us earlier about Shepherd's Delight.
It is, exactly.
Yeah, it's really not a good idea.
When old wives tell tales, you don't always have to listen to them. That's another parable I learned when I was young.
But there's something to it. I mean, a lot of women regard the engagement ring as being almost a statement of intent.
Well, you would hope.
Like as a man. No, but intent to provide. Like a man who can give you a proper, decent engagement ring is a man who will protect and provide for you.
Well, yeah, he's serious about the future.
And he's not just, it's not a lucky packet ring, you know. Mm. That's what a lot of people are saying.
Well, Tim Tebow is going to provide.
Okay, but what's he doing? Is he still playing?
He's more of an analyst nowadays, so he's more on the TV side of things.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, look, this guy copped a lot of flack because he's like so pro-Jesus and the whole thing about taking a knee. Mm-hmm. And then basically his entire routine was killed for people taking a knee to be anti-anthem. So people actually forgotten about him.
Oh, right.
Because now taking a knee...
They've kind of put his story into the same category as Colin Kaepernick's story.
Well, no, it's like this thing. Taking a knee doesn't... Like, people have forgotten who this guy is because now taking a knee means something so different.
Totally
so
different.
Colin Kaepernick's actually ruined this guy.
Yeah. So although poor old Tim. Seems well, Tim Tebow's happy. He's marrying Demi, and she's by no means a loser in the beauty queen front. She's definitely won all of those.
Mm-hmm.
So good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her. Good for him. Happiness. I do notice a lot of these American celebrities are stealing our women.
Well, it started with that Adam Levine.
Yes, he took that Bahati.
Okay, well, she's Namibian,
but
same thing.
We'll take her.
They use our money.
Yes.
I don't think Charlize is with anyone at the moment.
Yeah, well, she's a bit over the...
Do you think so? I still think she looks great. In fact, I woke up this morning. First picture that came up on my Instagram. It's a picture of her. Mm-hmm. Looking
her at the Golden Globes. She looked amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never seen the appeal. But then again, I'm, you know, it's horses for courses.
You've also had a problem with the East Rand for a long time, Ben.
I don't think I really have.
Yes, you do.
I've given the East Rand some time. I've been there.
Here is our Michelle from Cape Town this time, not the other Michelle who messaged us earlier, saying, I found a wedding ring in our shark tank that a guest lost while diving. He lives in Europe and was ecstatic after we couriered back to him. Isn't that interesting?
Jeez.
In the shark tank. Are Canadians nice or are Americans just assholes? Someone told me the other day Americans are great when they aren't in America.
Okay.
There's an interesting observation from somebody.
I had to think about that.
And then someone says, holy hell, ass, that was a rather accurate description of an anus opening.
Oh, in retrospect, yes.
There wasn't even like the sound of the ocean to basically neutralize that. It was just straight up.
Yeah, in all its microphone-enhanced glory.
Those are the realities of cruise ships.
All right.
Did anyone see what the ANC are promising of the weekend?
No, who cares?
It's much of the same.
Yeah, it's more the same. They're going to promise.
I can even bring myself to opening a website. Now.
They're going to promise everything and deliver nothing.
Okay, so it's the same slogan as last time.
Same as always.
They won them all the votes.
Now, this morning we've got a guest popping by, nothing near ordinary. George Sachs is a world-renowned saxophonist who's been interested in the instrument since he was at high school. Fast forward to 2019, he's toured the world, played for royalty alongside rock stars, even set the first world record for skydiving while playing the sax. How do you like that? Sounds interesting.
Yeah, I didn't realize you'd have to even blow air into it when you're skydiving. I thought it would play itself.
Just make it happen, right?
Yeah.
So he is South Africa's top saxophonist and a jazz maestro.
Oh, really? I know.
Started experimenting with the saxophone in high school. Studied fine art at Wits. Grab a seat, man. Just returned from an international tour representing South Africa in over 16 countries, including Dubai, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, United Kingdom, Ibiza, and Italy. Set a first world record, as I mentioned, while skydiving. He's also commissioned to perform for King Willem Alexander of Holland.
Very good. We all know he loves sax.
Yeah, he does.
That guy loves sax.
So, George, nice to see you, man.
Hi, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you for coming. That is a beautiful saxophone. It could do with a bit of a polish, but it's
1969 Summer Mark 6.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that is an antique.
Yeah, it's vintage. It actually should be in a museum, to be honest.
And it plays beautifully, huh?
Well, it's in the it's in the hands of the creator. However, it does help having a great horn to work with. You know?
So is that an alto saxophone?
Tenor.
Tenor saxophone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Beautiful.
For the tenor, it's got a much lower, sexier frequency.
Play some for me.
Oh, yeah?
Let's get in the mood, yeah. Yeah, it's the sexiest instrument in the world.
On a Monday morning.
All right. He's got it. Beautiful. Now, if you don't know, you might have already seen George. You might have seen him performing. He's performed with groups like Goldfish, Uhuru, Manga Groove. He's also performed at Space Ibiza with Carl Cox, Pasha, Cafe Del Mare. He's played Nikki Beach. He's played in Miami at 35 Social and at Groove Armada in Israel, as well as with Jamiroquai when he came to South Africa.
Yeah. We opened for him with Household Funk.
That's amazing.
It really was. It's such a great experience. And we actually even got to meet with him and chat with him. Such a lovely guy.
It's funny how, like, you've got this area that has just recently sort of burst into bloom. And it started maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, where you have a live saxophonist playing along with DJs or whatever else is going on. And it wasn't a big thing before then. Like, if you rewind the clock 10 years ago, people would never have seen that anywhere. And then it became a big deal. Yeah. And with you guys, it's always fascinated me how whatever's playing, you can riff on that. You can join in, you can have you kind of play along with the melody, you bring in your own interpretation of it. It seems to me it's like a very live, very fluid, very exciting thing. It's almost like a singer who's just kind of playing around on the music.
Yeah, absolutely, Gareth. You're absolutely right. You know, we started doing it back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and my DJ partner and I at the time were the first people to do it. And at the time, we were the only guys, obviously the only guys doing it, mixing live house with...
Did people get it immediately?
Well, even now, people are sometimes quite stunned. They're not sure how to take it, but then, you know, the music catches you and you can't help but tap your foot and start enjoying, which is what it's all about, really. But yeah, back then when we started, the jazz community was completely, you know, totally ostracized. Like, how could you do that?
Yeah, they were horrified. They thought you're breaking protocol.
Yeah. Yeah, how can you sell out and play electronic music? And I was like, guys, this is a new style of jazz. You know, the elements of jazz, like improvisation, freestyle, that's a big part of jazz. So I was like, guys, let's take jazz into the new century.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep
it fresh. But it's funny, like a lot of jazz musicians are very... I don't want to be rude, but they seem a little bit self-absorbed and self-indulgent.
Well, look, it is quite a introverted kind of art form, but it just depends on your approach and how you want to project it onto the public. I mean, for me, it's all about bringing light and beauty into the world. You know, I like to see smiling faces when I'm playing. I like people to just feel their joy and beauty, kind of heal them through music. That's my main goal.
So what drew you to the saxophone in the first place?
Gareth, I had no idea I was going to be a saxophonist.
Hmm?
I mean, I was studying law and eventually I switched over to fine arts because I've always been an artist at heart. And actually, when I was in high school, they had a saxophone there. They were like, do you want to play the saxophone or the violin? There's no saxophonist teacher. But so I tried the violin.
Yeah.
Man, it was not awful. For you.
What was awful about it? You were just not naturally gifted at it, or you hated the sound, or it was difficult to master?
If you ever have kids and you want to scratch your nails on the...
Yeah. Give them a violin.
Give them a violin. The first lesson was how to crook your neck in order to hold it. But the saxophone, as soon as I opened that case and just saw that beautiful golden light, I just knew. It was like falling in love instantly.
It is the sexiest instrument, right? It just really is beautiful. How long did it take you to get to a point where you felt confident to play in front of people?
Gareth, it's really strange. As soon as I got the basics down, you know, how to assemble it and how to actually blow it,
yeah.
I could just naturally play. I couldn't believe it at first myself. I really believe I have a God-given gift. And I mean, after a couple of months, I was playing really, really well, just closing my eyes and just playing. And it may sound odd to a lot of people.
No, it almost feels like you and the instrument are one and the same.
Yeah, it was definitely a calling. Definitely a calling. From where or how, I don't know. But I mean, obviously, look, it's a very complicated instrument to learn. And with music, you never really tend to know everything about it. I mean, I'm still learning every time I play, every day I play. I'm learning and improving my abilities on the saxophone and as a musician. You know, and then partly that's part of the beauty of being an artist is that there's no ceiling with where you are with your art, and there's no limit to learning. Okay, now I know everything about saxophone, not even close.
So tell me about the instrument itself quickly, because it's obviously a wind instrument, it's a brass instrument, but you use a reed, right?
Yeah, it is. It does have a reed. It's almost like the tip on a record player. Without this tiny little piece of bamboo, this entire instrument is useless.
How does that work? Do you have to buy new ones and refresh them every now and then? How does it work?
You have to replace them. Sometimes they last for a night, and sometimes they can last for a month. And each one's kind of individual. So sometimes you'll find a reed that sounds really great, and then other times that one won't sound great, but you'll have it.
So there's still, even though the rest of the instrument is metal and it knows what it's doing and it does what it's told, and you know what you're pushing where and what kind of sound you're delivering through the instrument, there's that little bit of unknown.
Yeah.
In the reed, which gives it a very unique sound every time, right?
Absolutely. At the time when the saxophone was invented, back in 1861, you know, they couldn't include it really much in classical music because it is like considered an imperfect instrument. You know, from a piano, if you push C, you get C.
You get a
saxophone,
C note,
you play C. It's...
You get different variations.
Yeah, and actually I found that's why it was pulled into jazz, because it's, you know, it's almost like the human voice. You can bend the notes, you can growl, you can squeal. It's very human. And actually, that's partly why it's such a great instrument for house music, is because, you know, especially if you're DJing off vinyl or CDJs or more naturally, then the key does tend to drift. So with saxophone not being that perfect instrument, you can also bend your notes to harmonize with the song.
Beautiful. And then, of course, you've got this, that's got a reputation for being the sexy instrument, the sexy sound, right?
Is this show PG?
No, I mean, you can say what you want, but it is. It's regarded as like the instrument of lovemaking.
It is.
Where did it get that reputation?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Probably from movies. Movies can be blamed for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Especially like cheesy 80s movies where whenever there were two people and they started having sex, it'd be some guy playing a saxophone.
Taylor's Whisper.
Like Jessica Rabbit type.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Detective movie.
Yeah.
Vibe.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I get a lot of people coming to my shows, and maybe I see them years later and they say, oh, we fell in love at your gig. And I actually seen them at my gig making out and kissing. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm doing a good job.
Yeah, people like that.
And then years later, they're like, hey, we fell in love at your gig and we want to get married. Can you come play at our wedding? I kid you.
Oh,
not.
Really?
It's amazing.
Do you do weddings occasionally?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You don't mind doing that?
Celebrations of love. I mean,
that's where you get called. So tell me about the Dutch king. William Alexander?
That was an amazing experience.
What happened?
We were playing at a summit, and he was there. And we were playing for a bunch of scientists from all over the world. And we were just entertaining them. They were actually quite crazy party animals.
The scientists?
The scientists.
Wow,
one follow a water summit.
Scientists that's like a bit of you. They like a bit of saxophone, huh?
Yeah.
Cannot believe
at a water summit.
Yeah. Like it's a national water summit. They're all talking about new technology and water. Right. So we're like, guys, we're gonna have a party now. They tore that stand apart.
Really?
But he saw us somehow, and one of his bodyguards in camp said, King William's having a party tonight, he'd like you guys to come and play.
That was a bit short notice.
Sure.
Yeah, we actually thought the guy was joking, but then he says we realized he was serious, so we're like, all right, cool, we done.
Well, did he pay? It's always important.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because we don't like kings that don't pay.
No, definitely.
And it was a good party?
It was amazing.
Oh.
He has all these, you know, security and bodyguards and everything, and he just sends him to get him, give me a bottle of wine, give me a, just give me that.
Got to be good. It's good to be the king. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of a better job besides being a sax player or a radio DJ.
No, I think a sax player's up there, though. So you always wear a little ring around your neck, which you attach to the sax. Is that just to help you with the weight of it, or is it just so you don't... I mean, you're not going to lose your sax. It's
sometimes I just hook it on someone's bra. Like
you just hook it in someone's bra?
Actually, this is
careful.
The sax strap.
This is the age of me. Yeah, so tell me how it works.
Just clips on there.
Yeah?
It just helps you support the, saxophone. I don't know if you can see me out there.
No, but we can explain. It basically just it clips on, and then your saxophone.
Put your hands free.
Okay, so you can use
just your thumb on there.
Now, when they attach a microphone to that thing, do they just put it on the lip of the horn at the end?
There's different ways, but the standard radio mic does clip on over there. I mean, sometimes you do use a condenser or like SM57 or something, depending on the show and what you're doing.
And that's made of brass, solid brass.
God, it's beautiful. Selma's saxophone is a secret composition.
Oh, really?
Of gold, brass, and tin. Nobody knows the composition. Wow. That's why Selma, the ones made, the vintage ones, are the ultimate sax.
Where was this saxophone made?
This is a French saxophone, Selma Paris.
It's a real thing.
Lucky to have this baby.
Is there some mother of pearl on there, or is it just a reflection?
Yeah, they use mother of pearls in the keys because they believe that the frequency that mother of pearl vibrates with the gold and the other metals vibrated to a really optimum frequency.
Mm. Magnificent.
It's so complicated.
It's complicated and simple at the same time.
Mm. What do all those different things do along the
Gareth?
Those give you different keys?
This is your left pinky.
Okay.
And I don't know why they put the most notes on your left pinky, but they did say Adolf Sax was a little bit nuts.
Okay.
So maybe that's why that your weakest finger.
Because it does, Leanne's right, it looks so complicated to those of us who don't know what it does. It's just basically opening and closing different holes to create different notes, right?
Like essentially, if you straighten it out, it's just a long tube.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you close the holes, you get a deeper sound. That's really the basics of it. However, I think the complication is actually what makes it so expressive. Because it's kind of abstract in a way that you can't actually see what you're playing. I mean, if you're playing piano, you can look at the keys and you can see where you're at. But because you can't see, you kind of have to feel. And I think that's partly what gives the instrument such a beautiful, sensual sound.
Right.
Yeah, it's so wonderful to see you.
Yeah, it's cool. Thanks,
you so much,
man.
For me on
what,
your show.
What are we playing? Come, let's have a song.
Have you got those queued up, yeah?
What do we got here? I'll play one of these. Do you want a Black Coffee, We Dance Again? You want to play with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let me get all of this going for you, and then we're going to have a little bit of music from the live saxophone, George Sax, here this morning, and we're going to be playing a little bit of Black Coffee with it as well, so you can get some idea of what's going on here. You got the headphones? You good to go?
Good to go.
All right, beautiful. Here it is. Thank you. such a great sound. Oh, getting deep in there, man. That's fantastic.
It's a good feeling.
It is, huh? I can see how much you get into it, man. You just love it.
You know, you can't do it if you don't love it.
No, for sure. So are there a lot of saxophonists? I can't imagine that there are that many people who are at your level. It's a hard instrument to master, and you've obviously been playing for years now. So it's something that just, as you say, you feel your way through it. But for a lot of people, I'd imagine it's very difficult to learn. It's difficult technically to master this instrument. And then also to be able to make a living out of it is just damn near impossible, right? Because being a musician.
Yeah.
It's not all easy.
No. Look, you definitely have to be what I consider an entertainment entrepreneur. Mm. In fact, I'm busy writing a book at the moment.
Yeah?
So, yeah. I'd like to interview you, actually.
Sure.
Give you a whole chapter.
What the hell am I going to talk about?
No, well, it's about being an entertainment entrepreneur, you know, like just the things we've learned and how to actually make money out of music and the arts. I mean, it's a business like any other. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many great artists sitting at home like, oh, I don't have gigs, I don't know. No, if you're not,
you've got to make it happen, right?
You've got to make it happen, just like you. That's partly why I admire you so much, Gareth.
So what kind of, what you said earlier, you get asked to do weddings, you get asked to do things for the King of Holland, you get these corporate gigs, but what's the majority of your work?
Gareth, it's never the same gig twice or the same week twice, to be honest. Actually, next week I'm going to Zambia with my girlfriend. She's also a wonderful vocalist. So, mm-hmm. We're heading out to Zambia. We're going to be playing some beach clubs there. We're going to be launching a beach party.
Sounds amazing.
At Kariba Inn, Siavimba. So we're going to be shooting a video on the boat and promoting the beach.
Sounds like a good way to spend some time.
Yeah, we're going to be taking our South African vibes out there to the Zambians. We're playing some clubs, drama and granddaddies, as well as some restaurants and one or two events for like alcohol branding companies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's next week's schedule.
For the 1 week.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Sounds fantastic. Where's your favorite place you've played?
Wow. Sure, that's such a tough one because it's every gig is so amazing, but I must say Ibiza is something really, really special. Particularly, I mean, I was playing at Pacha this season, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, just such an honor to play in that club. And I was also working with one of the great DJs of house music, DJ Pipi, who's one of the founders of
Balearic House. Oh, you know him, Leanne.
Mm.
Yes.
The guy's in his 70s, and he started playing in the late 70s. Like,
and he's still all right? Because, I mean, I would imagine by now that guy must be pretty addled.
It's actually, I can't believe it. I look at him like, and he plays all night long. He doesn't stop on vinyl and he's rocking it. I mean,
it's amazing.
Really, I mean, that's something.
That place is something else, huh? I've got to go. I've never been.
What?
No, never been.
You may never come back.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's a party, right?
Yeah.
It's seriously a good party.
Look, the island does have another side. I mean, it does have a very mystical, spiritual side as well. I mean, it's beautiful. Places that are, you know, people go there for meditations and yoga. It's attracted people like in that kind of field from all over the world. India, they all go there to do these retreats and whatnot. So that on the one side of the island, and the other side of the island, complete, if you love house music,
right,
and you love DJ culture,
it's like the place.
That's the place. Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure spending some time with you this morning. Thank you for bringing your magnificent instrument in here and for playing some stuff for us. Can we play out with a little bit of your own Believe?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right. That'd be great. Thank you.
Brilliant. So much. This is George Sachs, everybody. Let me wrap it up with the unnews, and then we'll get to just some last-minute treats for you to wrap up your Monday morning. It's a perfect way to start your week, and we are here to keep you company today and through the course of the rest of the morning with plenty of original programming. If you want to join us for any more, you know what to do. You can either go and download whatever podcast you want at your own leisure, listen to it as it suits you, or you can listen live. There's always stuff going on cliffcentral.com. Coming up in a moment or two, George Sachs is going to play us out with Believe, but first, here's what you need to know. Fikile Mbalula, head of ANC partying and turning up, says that this year the party intends on telling fewer lies but going more all out on providing entertainment on the political roadshows. Most South Africans can't afford to attend events like Afropunk, so by creating events with big-time performers, they will create a more lasting impression, and that's what they're looking to secure votes with. Demi Lee Nell Peters is about to add another hyphen to her name. That's right. After Tim Tebow took a knee in the past week and produced a diamond the size of a small Burundian boy's fist, She will soon be known as Demi Lee Nell Peters Tebow. And the Australian Open starts this week. The main talking point is still Andy Murray's approaching retirement. What people are most drawn to was that the post-press conference, Murray's mum actually gave him a hug. It was the first time that she's ever done this, so naturally, she turned to stone instantly. We will see you tomorrow. Here it is, George Sachs playing us out with Believe. CliffCentral.com. I hope you have an excellent day. Keep it on. And keep it loving with the saxophone playing in the background. Listen to this.
This is CliffCentral.com.